believe in the concept of eternity, then you believe in it for yourself. And if you believe in a concept of eternity, then you believe there's, you don't believe in beginnings and you don't believe in ends. You believe somewhere, in some dimension, somehow, there's an infiniteness to all of this. And if that's the case, then you look at your own life as like a parenthesis in eternity. There's an open parenthesis, which is called your conception, and then there's a closed parenthesis called your death. And in there is your life. And then before that parenthesis, there's this void that you know existed. I mean, you read history books and you know that there was something there. And then on the other side of the closed parentheses, there's like what goes on at the end of your death. Right? You ask yourself the question, what am I here for and what is my purpose and how can I be happy in the fulfillment of that purpose as I live my life, which is what I want to do. I want to feel joyful. I want to feel good as I live my life. Who doesn't? That's what we all want. And I want to feel successful and I want to feel happy. So then you say, all right, I'm going to find my purpose. I'm going to find out, what am I here for? What am I about? All right. So how do you do that? I'll just share with you how I did it. I went through in my mind, in meditative experiences, and re-experienced earlier phases of my life. I could see myself at the age of 30. I could see myself in my mind. I could see the clothes I was wearing. I could see the relationships that I was in. I could see the home that I lived in. I could see the room. I could see what I was working on in my life. And I could see myself. I could see my face, this 30-year-old face and this body, and what it looked like at 30. And I thought that was really interesting to see that in the world of thought, nothing dies. So that in thought, which is where we experience our life, 30 for me, which is 20 years ago, still exists in my mind, right? Because memory, all memory is just thought, formless. And then I could experience 20. And I could literally pick a day in my 20th year, which was 1960, and be in that day. I could literally, I had enough information. It's so amazing that they find that as people are dying and they call them senile, you know, that they say they just blurt out dates and events and things on a Tuesday, April the 3rd, and it was 1891, and then you go look it up and you find that it was real. I mean, it's like, so that everything that you experience in your life is there somewhere in this computer called your mind. And if you work hard on it enough in your meditation, you can be there and you can get to the day, January 12th, you know, 1960. You can get it. And experience that day and who you were with at the time. You could do that for literally every day of your life if you could train yourself well enough, if you thought it was worthwhile. So anyway, you can go back and you can be 20 and you see yourself as this 20-year-old kid and you look at the path you're on and you look at what you're doing. For me, at 20, I was in the military and I was overseas on board an aircraft carrier in the Pacific. And I could see the things that I was reading at that time, the essays that I was writing. I was working on a novel at that time. And I had written a whole bunch of essays about how I disliked the requirements of the military to not have a mind. To be a good soldier, you have to never question anything and just do what you're told. And I railed against that and against being inspected and against uniforms, everybody looking alike and all of this. This is just where I was at that time. Well, and then from the perspective of a 50-year-old, 30 years later, looking back at that, I can see that those thoughts had a great deal to do with the books that I wrote and with the tapes that I've produced and with what my whole life has been, right? But that I had to go through that at that time. And then I can go back in my meditation to being 10. And I can see the 10-year-old boy, and that 10-year-old boy is there. Everything about that little 10-year-old kid is there. The quarterback on the local football team and all of the things that I was doing at the age of 10. And it's interesting, as you look from the perspective, as you go back through these stages of your life, in your meditation, and it becomes very, very real, you can see that what you're doing, you become that in your mind. You sort of meld the present with the past in your mind. And you can see then what you were doing at that time and how it led to, and you can see almost like this phenomenal plan that was taking place. All right? So you're discovering your purpose, but you're going backwards to do it. Okay. So now I'm 10 years old and it's 1950. and my mind. Then you go back to being five, and you can, in your mind, you can see this little five-year-old kid, and you can see the all of the events and all of the things, and who the, where I was living, and what, and experience that, and you keep going. Where I'm getting to is that you just keep going back right to your birth. In your mind, you could, and as you go back, if you do this gradual enough and use your mind in a strong enough way, you can begin to see a whole life plan unfolding in your mind and seeing how everything fit together exactly. Every experience was there for you to have. All right? And then you can go back right to your birth. And in some places they call this a rebirthing kind of thing. There's nothing airy-fairy about it. There's nothing weird about it. It doesn't require any special crystals or any incense or anything like that. It's not loaded with any of the paraphernalia that becomes associated with it. You literally, in your mind, you're getting so good now at going back in your mind that you can experience your own birth. And you can even go back to before your birth. You can guide yourself right through to your conception, right through to, and look at the time. And I look at the time that, and if you believe now, we'll go back to what I was saying a few minutes ago about this parenthesis in eternity, that there was a moment in which you existed in form and a moment before in which you didn't. I mean, that's just logical and that it has to be. What was the moment before you existed like? And the moment that you suddenly existed. And why? Why did you come into form? If you believe in a perfect universe, in a spiritual place that we are all in, and that on all of this enlightenment principles that I'm talking about here, then you know in your heart that you showed up here for a reason. If you were to ask anybody, what is it that you would really like to have said about yourself, whose life would you look at and say, this is what I would like to have been said about me? Or this is the masterpiece that I would like my life to be. Would it be about how much stuff did I get? Or how big was my bank account? Or how fast did I run? Or how quickly did I get there? Or who did I beat in the process? For some, it might be, and that might be very satisfying. But on a much higher level than that, the answer to that question for me is in looking at the lives of people like Christ, who was perhaps the most influential person ever to live on our planet, ever to be on our planet. Muhammad, Buddha, spiritual masters who were leaving a message about the power of the human mind. More recently in our times, people like Gandhi, who was able to turn around the whole fate of a nation that had been subservient to an empire, the British Empire, all through a nonviolence and all through an approach to loving people and not making conflict something that has to be debilitating or destructive, and to literally put them on a course of running their own lives, all through simplicity and all through a sense of beauty and appreciation. Or Mother Teresa, who labors in the streets of Calcutta, just serving and just giving, and knows what she is for, and knows that she's not against anything. You see, the irony, there's a real irony in all of this, and I'm not here to put down, in any sense of the word, success and performance and achievement. I'm a person who has a lot of all of those things in my life. But I've found that those are the kinds of things that begin to matter less and less. And they show up more and more in your life when you find yourself getting more tuned in to something much beyond all of that. It's like a knowingness. It's like creating a sense of what I'm here for, how I'm going to live this life that I have, and doing it in the service of others, maintaining a sense of spirituality about yourself, maintaining a sense of compassion and caring and love and decency for everyone that you meet, treating conflict and difficulties that come your way not as something for which you have to win or to master, but in fact as opportunities for you to see how you can transcend these things and not to have to use hatred and anger and bitterness and beating somebody else down in order to get to this higher place. It's very much a place of peace and
It doesn't mean like abdicating your role in life. It doesn't mean that you can no longer be an architect or that you can't be a salesman or whatever it is that you choose to do for a living. It's much beyond that. It's the way that you are, not what you're getting out of the way that you are. It's that wonderful work of art that your life becomes, that you begin to see that I can make my life unfold exactly the way the universe unfolds, with a real sense of perfection and harmony and peace for myself. And the more I do that, the paradox is that all of the things that I chased after so hard and so diligently show up in your life in just the right amounts. It's an attitude of knowing, of surrendering, not to anyone, but surrendering from the things that most of us are pursuing all of our lives, where we get on that stress-filled, fast pace, I have to achieve, I have to perform, I have to succeed, I have to become number one, I have to beat everybody else in order to prove myself. You begin to develop an inner sense of harmony that those kinds of things are very low-level determiners of what kind of a human being you're going to be. Some of the suggestions that I would give you to release this more is better idea is to simplify, as Thoreau reminded us, simplify, simplify, simplify. Let the affairs of your life number one and two rather than hundreds and thousands. I can't repeat it enough. Practice this one day at a time, the idea of saying no to more. A very emphatic no. No, I am not going to take on this additional burden. No, I am not willing to take on more work and more assignments. I am going to rearrange the priorities of my life. I know what is important. And talking to people who are on their deathbeds, I never heard one of them ever say, I wish I'd have spent more time at the office. Never did they ever say that. Always they said things like, I wish I'd have spent more time with my family. I wish I would have been more loving to my children or to my spouse. I wish we would have gone more places together. I wish I'd have held her hand a little more frequently and told her I loved her a little bit more, or just patted her on the back, or whatever it may be. Rearranging the priorities of your life, picturing yourself in a place where you are dying and passing on and saying, you don't want to be in that place where Ivan Illich was in the death of Ivan Illich, where he's asking as he's getting ready to die, what if my whole life has been wrong? You don't want to have to ask yourself that question. Another thing, of course, to get rid of this more is better attitude is to give yourself moments of silent contemplation and treat them as absolutely essential in your daily routine. More and more you have to realize that this time alone where you have silence is going to help you to rearrange the priorities of your life, and it's going to get you off of that idea that you have to have more. Another thing that you can do to get rid of some of this more is better stuff is just to remember the words, I pass. You know, it's like when you're in a poker game and it's time for you to take on more cards, you have the option always to say, I pass. You also have the same option to pass when people ask you to do more, or when you start telling yourself that you have to make more money, or you have to have more things, or you have to purchase this, or whatever it may be that crowds your life. Just the words, I pass. I can let this go. And it'll help you to get to that peaceful place where you find that more isn't better at all. One of the great things you can do to get rid of this more is better attitude is to get back to nature. I really believe the wilderness is therapy. Give yourself time in the woods or in the mountains or walking in fields or along the beach. Just being in nature is a way of letting go of the disease of wanting more. There's, I don't think, anything more healing and more peaceful than to be out into nature and realize that it's just right. That it doesn't need more. Nature doesn't scream out and saying, I'm not enough, I have to have more of this, I have to have more of that. It's all flowing, it's all divine. And you can be in harmony with that nature if you give yourself that opportunity. Take your kids out, and even if you go out to the backyard and sleep in a tent, or go for a walk in the woods, or go on a canoe trip, or whitewater rafting, or trek through the mountains, just take the time to be out there. And when you are out there, let go of all of these thoughts about what you have to do and what your rules are. You don't have to do any of that. You just have to live and enjoy and be peaceful. And the doubt that you may have as you're listening to that by saying, yeah, that's easy for you to say, but I've got this mortgage and I got all of these things that I have to do. That doubt is what you're going to act upon. And that doubt that you're experiencing in this moment by telling yourself, nah, I can't really do that. That doubt is your ego. Your ego thrives on doubt. Your ego is convincing you all the time that peace and joy and fulfillment and love and bliss are not things that are available to you, because when you experience those things, you will be having God in your life. You'll have that celestial light of God, and your ego is terrified of that celestial light of God. It is blinded by it, because you no longer need the ego once you experience that more isn't better. Surrender to this radical notion that is required for you to awaken to the awareness that all habits begins with thoughts. It's radical, I know. I know it's not something you're accustomed to hearing, but you have a habit because you have intended it to be there. Now what you do is you surrender to a new consciousness, a thought that whispers, I can do this thing in this moment. I will receive all the help that I need as long as I stay with this intention and go within for the assistance I need. Now you announce to yourself that you're no longer that old habitual person. For just a second, just for a second, you awaken just for a moment. Then you go to the next moment with this surrender, not thinking about tomorrow or anything in the future. In the now, in this moment, you have the answer. That's how you go about making those seemingly difficult changes, one step at a time, with an inner grace that allows you to surrender and stop fighting. All those habits, those things that have plagued you for your entire lifetime that you think you can't change, that are just a part of you, are nothing more than thoughts turned to intention, turned into laziness, addiction, short-temperedness, phobias, fatigue, whatever. Change the thought, change the intention, and you no longer have those as your consciousness. What you can do is create an inventory of all the things in your life which you continue to pursue, but truly you don't want in your life. This is actively putting into your life the intention of no longer pursuing the things that you don't want, which may have been your habit for a lifetime. So you remind yourself of the wisdom of the notion that you never get enough of what you don't want. Then you take this hour, this very hour, this day, now, and you create an inventory of what you would like next to the one you have outlined. Rather than deception, you might substitute truth in your relationships. Rather than booze, you might substitute 8 glasses of water a day. Rather than anger, you might substitute love and harmony. By assessing that which continues to rain into your life because you're letting it in and encouraging the leaks in your life, you automatically have the handle on a new way of eliminating the erosion in your life. You fill your life with that which you don't want, largely because you've simply never considered the available options, and you fear the glorious harmony and the intimacy that comes from refusing to chase after the poisons that are killing you. By becoming aware of them, by using your invisible miracle-making mind to create that which you truly want and know you deserve, you find yourself living in harmony. You begin to experience in the physical world all that which is what you thought you were entitled to create. Inventory your life and get it on purpose, and substitute the things that you are pursuing that you don't want with the opposite. Substitute what you do want and begin then to pursue that. And you see it works. It's like real magic. Thought, intention, and no longer pursuing that which doesn't work for you. It's like getting your life off of scatteredness, off of being splintered, and being on purpose. Your life is like a parenthesis in eternity. You're conceived, you're born, you die, and eternity surrounds this time-space event called your life. Nothing in the universe, as we study it, is without purpose. Even though we may not understand what its purpose is, your life has a grand mission. You have a heroic mission for being here. As Kierkegaard said, we all come to Earth with sealed orders, and it's really discovering those sealed orders, and you'll find that your purpose as a human being isn't really about what you do in your life. It really isn't about the daily activity of your life that is my purpose to be an accountant or is it to be a dentist? Is my purpose to drive a cab or to stay home and take care of my children? Is my purpose to write a book or is it to what? It isn't really about that. Your purpose will be defined for you as you detach yourself from these concerns with outcome and shift to how may I serve. You see, you can't get anything while you're here. You can't own anything. You can't have anything while you're here. So the only thing you can do with this life, since you can't take anything with you, you can't collect anything, you can't own anything, the only thing you can do with this life is give it away. You show up in a little body, you leave in a body, and you take nothing with you. The measure of your life will be not in what you accumulate, but in what you give away. And when you get your life on purpose, you'll find that your purpose is about giving. It's about giving, loving, and sharing. That's the fabric of the universe. Harmony, ease, not dis-ease. Within every cell is that organizing intelligence that is at ease. You will discover your grand purpose as you shift from what's in it for me to how may I serve and assist others. And when you get to that point, it won't matter what you do. It won't matter whether you're producing a tape series like I'm doing right now, or whether you're holding your little baby in your arms, or whether you're going for a swim, or whatever activity of your life, you'll find that you are on purpose when you are about giving. And I find that one thing in my, I stop categorizing things in my life as, I work so many hours, and I spend so many hours with my family, and I spend so many hours exercising, and all of that is about purpose. All of it is. Every single thing. And whatever it is that I'm doing, I am focused on how can I serve? How can I best do that? And it keeps me purposeful all of my days. And it stops me from searching around underneath rocks and behind trees to find my purpose, like it's going to show up someplace. It isn't something that's outside of you. You came into the world of form from the eternal to this world of limitations and physicalness. And you came here with a purpose. And it is about discovering that divine intelligence that is within you and giving it away. So what you have to learn how to do in whatever it is that you do is to fall in love with what you do and then sell that love. Give that love away. And what you're doing won't make that much difference. The old saying is that life is what happens to you while you're making other plans. And you must understand that every moment in your life is a miracle to be lived. That you must stop looking for miracles in something in the future. And that not falling in love with your plan means that if you want to get someplace, terrific. Enjoy every step along the way. And then if you want to alter that, let's say you want to be a physician. You're young and you go to school and you went and all that, and then you realize, no, I don't think I want to go to medical school. That doesn't have to be a horrendous kind of letdown or a failure of some kind. You simply say, I think I'll move in this direction now. And every day you have to live fully. Rather than suffering or postponing your gratification or postponing your purpose in the pursuit of something in the future which may or may not arrive for you, and if it does, you'll very likely be a completely different person anyway. That's one of the hard things to understand. Heraclitus said, there's nothing permanent but change. You know, change is the only thing there always is, including all of us all the time. So if you set a goal for yourself for a long time, you have to understand that you're going to be very, very different from the person that you are now. I had a good friend who was an internist, and he was in his 40s, and he said to me, you know, it's this practice, it's just getting to me. I'm owned by it, I'm making a lot of money and all that, but I don't want to do this. I want to be a sportscaster. He wanted to broadcast and wanted to practice on high school teams, and he always wanted to give that a try where he could be his own boss and not be a slave to and all that. I said, well, why are you pursuing this, you know, you're a physician and all that, but why would you want to continue doing that? He said, well, I decided a long time ago that I was going to be a physician and that I can't change that now. I'm a doctor. And I said, who decided that you were going to be a physician? He said, well, I was 18 years old, and I made that decision. I said, would you go to an 18-year-old today to get vocational guidance for where you should be going in your life? Would you consult a teenager for that? She said, well, of course not. I said, well, isn't that what you're doing? If you're not happy and not being fulfilled in what you're doing in this moment, you have the option to change that. And you don't have to be attached to what you've been. What you've been is just the choices that you made then.
You are not what you do. If you are what you do, then when you don't, you aren't. Isn't that true? You are not what you do. Your value doesn't come from what you accomplish. Your worth as a human being does not come from your successes out there. Your value doesn't determine by whether or not you win or not. Don't you understand? If you have to win in order to have value, then somebody else has to lose. And that somebody else who's losing is determining whether you're a winner or not. And if they don't cooperate, then you're a loser. When you always are looking over your shoulder to determine whether you're valuable or not, you're giving your value up as a person and putting it in the hands of somebody else who you hope won't hit the ball over the net or who won't be able to run faster than you or won't make as much money as you. Don't you understand that those people are now controlling your life? And if they hit the ball over the tennis net one time more than you do, that makes you a loser? And it's in their hands? No, you're not what you do. You are what you believe about yourself. Your value doesn't come from anything but what you choose to think. And your corner of freedom in life is the willingness and the ability to think anything you want. That's yours. No one can change that for you. No one can take that away from you. You can think what you want. Your corner of freedom is that you can think in the way that you choose. One of the most important things to learn in life is a sense of appreciation for yourself. If one advances confidently in the direction of his own dreams and endeavors, to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. Yeah, you get out there and lead your life fulfilled, happy, excited. Success will chase you in the numbers that you need it.
There's a great little thing about worry. There ain't no sense in worrying about the things you got control over. Because if you got control over them, there ain't no sense worrying about it. Now that only leaves 50% of the rest of the stuff. Let's deal with that. There ain't no sense in worrying about the things you don't have control over. Because if you don't have control over them, there ain't no sense worrying about it. Now you've dealt with everything that you ever had to worry about. So it makes worrying about anything pretty silly, doesn't it? Pretty silly. So what I want to do is alleviate the worry about the things you got no control over. And to understand that you have control over a lot more than you ever dreamt you had control over in your life when you become enlightened. And what is enlightenment? Read the Bhagavad Gita, one of the most ancient books on our planet. You know what it says about enlightenment? Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. That's it. That's it. You're not going to change too much about what you do, but you're going to be so thrilled at chopping wood and carrying water. I mean, you're going to go, wow, what is this water? Whoa, you're going to love the water and the wood, and you're going to be so grateful for being here to chop it. But you're still going to chop wood and carry water, whether you're enlightened or not. So you might as well get to the enlightenment part of it and enjoy it all right? A big part of what I really firmly believe is that you will never be enlightened. You will never get to the highest level whatever you want to call it, self-actualization, Maslow called it. I call it no-limit living, and the sky's the limit. Inner-directedness, what Riesman called it. Call it what you want. You don't get to the top in that area of your life unless you're doing what you love and loving what you do. You've got to be in harmony. You will not be there. And it's a simple thing. And what I want to do is take some of these principles that I have been studying for years and how they all apply in your life. And one of them, one of the reflections of one of them is you've got to do what you love in order to have abundance in your life. And it doesn't mean quitting your job. You've still got to chop wood and carry water. Or it might mean that. But whatever it means, you change around how you conceive of it. But before we do that, we got to get to this. What is this? What is this form? And what does it mean to be a human being? See, if you were supposed to be a human doing, you know, I mean, that's what you'd have been called. We'd have come up with that over the years. We'd have said, well, you can't talk to me. I am a human doing, and you have no right to talk to me like that. But you see, that never happened, right? And it didn't happen for a reason, because you are a being. You're not a doing, all right? And it is that part of you that I want to address. You have to understand that you have to be able to stand in back of yourself and watch your form, which is the package that houses you. And 99% of who you are is not the package. It's the thought. And then you understand that you are divine enough to ask and important enough to receive. You are divine enough because you are connected, not through form, but through whatever it is that means to go beyond form. What is the prefix that means to go beyond form? What is it? We've got it in our language. We have to stay with language. The prefix that means to go beyond in our language is trans. To go beyond, to go past, to go above, trans form. And the connector along with the suffix that means the experience or the result of is shun in our language. Translation, the experience or result of going beyond one's form. Transformation. The ability to go beyond your form and to know that that is not you. You can't age a thought. You can't store a thought. You are thought. So now what we've established is that everything that's ever happened to you up until this moment is all thought. Okay? Now we're going to leave the microscope. We're going to the telescope. What I want you to do is imagine everything that's ever going to happen to you from this moment until you leave your form. And tell me, what dimension is that in? It's all thought, isn't it? The past is all thought. The future is all thought. Okay? Now all we have left is now. All right? The working unit of your life. Now. Let's try to get a hold of that. Here's one. Whoop. Oh, here it is. Whoop. Whoop. Here it is. Ah, damn. There's not even a now. As soon as you get a hold of it, you're in another one, aren't you? There's not even a now. Even the now is all thought. Everybody you know, everything you've ever done, everything you ever will do, it's all thought for you. And you're concerned about whether you're going to get a wrinkle? Can you wrinkle a thought? Can you age a thought?
I always loved E.E. Cummings, who didn't even have uppercases on his typewriter. Or if he did, he just refused to use them. He said, to be nobody but yourself in a world which is doing its best night and day, to make you just like everybody else, means to fight the greatest battle there is to fight and never stop fighting. Although I don't go with the fighting part, there is a sense of me that really knows what he's talking about. that to really know that you have a purpose, and that purpose isn't just manifested in some grandiose, heroic mission that is out there, but it's manifested in all of the daily ways that you interact and live and what you pursue. And I have learned not to be as crass and callous as I was at one time. I can remember that I used to get letters from people that were critical of what I was writing, particularly when Erroneous Zones first came out, and I didn't really handle that in the way that I would do it today. I used to be a big fan of H.L. Mencken's, and he once wrote about what he did with letters of criticism, and I had that Xeroxed, and I sent it to everybody who criticized me. And the letter went like this: I am sitting here in the smallest room in my house with your letter of criticism in front of me. Soon it will be behind me. Now, I don't even know where that came from. I haven't said that in 10 years. But I don't do that any longer. The more I get into this area of higher consciousness and heightened awareness, the more flabbergasted I become. It's just starting to blow me away. I mean, I'm really starting to believe this stuff, you know. It's like something very, very unusual in what we have been handed as our way of believing begins to happen when you just really surrender and let go. The process of allowing it to come into fruition, into this world, is what is just got me. It's like when you let go and surrender and become unattached to how it comes out, which is very difficult for us to not be attached to the outcome. And you just know that you're not alone. Everything that you need is there. And in spades. I mean, it's there and it just keeps showing up. And I mean, I test it now. It's like, all right, God, if you're really there, try this one on, you know. But I'll be in the process of writing something that is very much aligned with purpose, with not being attached to how it works for me, whether people are going to like it or not like it, whether people are going to buy it or not buy it, whether the publisher is going to be happy with it, whether it's going to be on the bestseller list, whether I'm going to make money. All of those things just literally have left my life. And you don't help, by the way, when you stand up and give me an ovation when I walk into the room, because I'm working on taming this ego, all right? And there it is right back. I'm saying, oh, this is really me. They really like me, you know, and look what I've done. Aren't I terrific? And then I have to remind myself that I'm not separate from you and that we're all one and that this is not really me. This is just sort of rent a Wayne Dyer, you know, that. So I'll be writing in a certain area, and I'll just stop, and I'll reach over. And what I do when I write is I surround myself. I rent a place. I leave my office, and I leave my home, but I stay close by. I'll get a large room, and I'll just fill it with books on the floor, all the books that people have sent me that I've been reading, that I've heard about, that publishers send me for review, all of that. I mean, I get thousands of these things, and anything that's in the area. And I just have come to the conclusion that there's no accidents, all right? So that every book that shows up has part of this consciousness in it, and I look at it and I'll think, ah, oh, this is just, what, this has nothing to do with me, and I go, it probably doesn't. I'll open it up and there will be something that's exactly what I've been looking for, and it's right there. And so I just surround myself with all of these things, and then I'll just stop in the middle of writing and walk over and just pick up anything, and it'll just clarify. It will be right there for me. When I write a book, I think about it for about a year. Just toss it around in my mind, and I'll talk to the publishers, and I'll tell them what I'm thinking about, and they'll say, no, we want you to write a sex book, you know, or we want you to write a book about how to make money, and I'll say, no, that's just not what I'm going to do, and I'll just talk to another publisher, and then they say, well, you can probably write whatever you want to write. So, I mean, I write from my heart, like I speak from my heart. I just come out, and for the last hour before I got here, I've been in a meditation, just asking the question over and over again, how may I serve these people who have honored me? You have honored me by just coming here to listen. And so I just ask over and over, how may I get out of my own ego? How may I serve?
the things that Maslow taught me that was really helpful to me was this hierarchy of needs that he talks about, okay? And everybody who reads Maslow knows that he's most famous for his hierarchy of needs. But they don't understand it, most people, because they haven't really immersed themselves in Maslow as I did for a big part of my life. The needs go like this. At the very bottom of this, it's like a triangle, it's a pyramid. At the very bottom, at the base of the pyramid, are your basic needs. And these needs are for food and for shelter and for air and for the basics to keep you alive. Then you move up this pyramid, which comes to a point up here, and you have different levels of needs that human beings have, the need for belonging, the need for loving. And then you get up a little further, and it's like the need for beauty appreciation and the need to have a sense of independence and a sense of belonging and a sense of identity and who you are. And then there's spiritual awakening. And then the very top is this thing called self-actualization, or what I call no-limit living, which is where you become to your own life like a great painter is to his or her creation. You're shading it and shaping it exactly the way you want it to go. You are a creator of your life rather than a reactor to other people's lives. And you're seeing the world as it is, not as you would like it to be. Now, the irony of this is, because I've done a lot of work with the Hunger Project in trying to end world hunger and so on, is that if you look at the very bottom, where people are starving to death because they don't have their basic needs of food met, and they're starving, and it's happening in the third world, it's happening in Ethiopia, and droughts in Africa and Bangladesh and places like that, and you find that these people who have no food because they're deprived of these basic needs are just starving. And then you find that there are people who can go through this whole ladder. That is, they can have their basic needs met, and then they can have their needs for individuality and their needs for beauty appreciation and spiritual awakening, and finally get up to this top place up here, which is self-actualization. Total no-neurosis living, total present moment, involved purpose, excitement, no need for approval, all of the kinds of qualities. And you find that these people, when you get to this place called self-actualization, can actually go without food, can fast, and live. Whereas if they were down here and they didn't have that food, they would die. Here they can even live on less food and still make it and live at a very high level. In Hermann Hesse's great novel, his parable, Siddhartha, Siddhartha is talking about hunger, and they're asking him about hunger. And he said, what good is fasting, they said. And he said, I can laugh at hunger. I can laugh at it. Down here, you can't laugh at it. With enlightenment, you can actually laugh at it and not even have it matter, not even have it affect you in your life, the starvation sense. So that all human beings, if they can get these various needs met, purpose and meaning and integrity and then beauty appreciation and then that spiritual awakening, which means that you begin to understand that it isn't something outside of you that is going to give you peace or happiness in your life. When the Pharisees asked Jesus, you know, where is the kingdom of heaven? His response was, the kingdom of heaven is within. It is not a place you get to, that you arrive at. It is a way of life. And when you get that and understand that and live these principles, you become your purpose and it becomes you. You become love and it becomes you. You don't pray to God to do things for you. You are not afraid to be God, that is to live as God inside of you and to see that we're all one, we're all part of this thing.